entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. My guest is Ed Tree, and he's actually been on the show. I had a senior moment and forgot about it, but he's been on before with my good friend Ron Marino, and we were demonstrating some other pedals. So, is that me? Who has a phone? Is your phone volume on?
No.
Mine's off. That's interesting.
No.
Where's... That's interesting. I don't know where that's coming from. Ghosts in the machine.
Oh,
anyway.
That's not unusual.
Anyway, Lori is with me. It's
Hello.
Good to see you. And we have a guest that's hidden. He's hidden. We're hinting that he's MI5, but he isn't. He works. You own, right, Genesis Publications?
No, I work with Genesis Publications.
You work with Genesis, yeah. Publication. David Hidley, he's joining us. He was en route from New Zealand, if I'm correct, to London, and he just stopped by. So,
yes.
What timing?
It's just perfect timing. So,
my old pal, I drove him down here.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, yeah.
Now, I never really got into... when we had the other show at Ron, we were showing pedals and devices, so we really didn't get to talk about you. So I want to get a little more into, you know, tell us a little bit about where you came from, where the lessons, what you listened to, your influences.
Right.
I'll let you go from there.
Well, geographically, speaking, where I grew up, it influenced my playing an awful lot.
Mm-hmm.
I was born in New Orleans,
oh,
and I grew up about 130 miles north of there in
mm-hmm.
Brookhaven, Mississippi. And it was sort of this vortex of blues and country music and New Orleans funk, all of that stuff I heard growing up. And I loved, you know, country music when I was small,
mm-hmm.
was hearing on the radio. And then, of course, the Beatles come along. And so then you get that influence. One thing I think is really ironic and funny is that I grew up 18 miles north of Bo Diddley.
Oh, wow.
And 10 miles south of Robert Johnson. And and the first Robert Johnson song I heard was, you know, Eric Clapton on a John Mayall record singing Ramblin' on My Mind.
Oh, wow.
So it's in my neighborhood, but you
right.
know, we didn't hear that stuff growing up. You know, it's just, it took the English guitar players to hear that music and you know, sort of make it their own and send it back to us. And we're like, oh, wait a minute, that was just...
That was ours to begin with, right?
Yeah, it was right here, but, you know, it was a little white guy.
Well, I was looking at your bio too, and you know, besides Spencer Davis, you played with Spencer Davis, but you mentioned that you also played with Booker T. Was he from that area?
Booker is from, of course, from Memphis. But
Memphis.
I was the the time that I worked with Booker, it was a Spencer Davis record. And it was just such a joy to play with him. What a sweet man. Mm-hmm. And when I showed up for the session the day and Booker T was there, I said, "This is not another day at the office for me." It's such an honor to play with you. And he was just, you know, wonderful. And we had a great few days recording. So
must have been amazing. Played some amazing people. So what was your first influences? Did you take lessons?
I paid a local guitarist who was really good for 10 lessons, and he gave me 3 lessons in Split Town. But I learned how to play.
You learned how to teach.
But he taught me some really important stuff in a few lessons. And he taught me to play a song that I loved. I wanted to learn how to play Don't Let the Sun Catch You Crying by Jerry and the Pacemakers.
Great song.
And it had a bunch of chords in it. So after I learned that, I could play a bunch of other songs. And I'm not going to mention any names in case Joe Crawford is listening, but you owe me 7 more lessons, dude.
So did you start right on electric guitar?
I had stolen my sister's cheap nylon string guitar.
There you go. We all had one of those.
Yeah. So I played that, and then I borrowed an electric guitar, and then, you know, when I was looked like I was going to want to keep doing it, my parents bought me my little cheap Japanese guitar, electric guitar, a Kingston, and probably nine months later, I got my Fender Mustang.
You know?
Yeah, you had to earn it by doing a number of lessons and practice time.
Right.
No, it's interesting. My first teacher, he actually taught me accordion and then went to guitar, was from New Orleans.
Okay.
And he had the coolest jazz master you ever saw. Great guy.
There you go.
But it wasn't the same guy as your guy. He didn't split down, come over here, so it wasn't that. Let's talk a little bit about influences, because that's an interesting, you know, where you were and the scene was different. I mean, I'm sure the British invasion had a deep influence on you, but you must have had you had such, all those people that you're talking about from that area, it must have been a unique experience.
I think it was. I mean, initially, when the British invasion happened, that we were all enamored with that, you know, but it all seemed so far away and impossible, but you know, we learned how to play the right chords, and we had a great lead singer, a guy named Brian Batson, and so Brian could sing in the key of the record, so we learned the chords, and we sounded pretty good, and we got more gigs, and we got better gear, and we got better gigs, and so we started a band in the 8th grade and stayed together until we graduated from high school. And then I went to the University of Mississippi for a couple of years. And during that time, my musical tastes were changing a little bit more. And I actually played the very first Delta Blues Festival with a band in college. And we got to see some of the sort of the second generation blues guys. And I can't even tell you who was there, but it was North Mississippi. So, the R.L. Burnside kind of.
So the blue, when you got to the university, you were into the blues more.
Yeah, definitely. And I opened a show for Fred McDowell when I was 19.
Oh, wow.
And watching him play close up, just the slide guitar just hit me, and I said, I got to learn how to do that. I loved his playing. And from there, I was always interested in songwriting and not being a purist, like I just want to learn somebody's style and just do that. But I always liked taking those influences and mashing them up. And
yes, from listening to the clips that you sent me, you've got a pretty diverse repertoire of styles and stuff. Well, let's go ahead and play a clip. I'm going to play the because we were talking about this just before the show, and there's a lot of guitars on it, and you're doing all the leads.
Right.
And what I wanted to talk about a little bit is how you instead of, like, you know, a lot of the Southern rock groups, they'll do harmonic double leads.
Right.
You're doing, like, counterpoint to each. You're, right, like, you're answering yourself, so the two guitars are going back and forth, which is kind of an interesting style in itself. And so I want to talk a little bit about this, but also listen, again, some of the tone that he's getting is just to die for. It's just great stuff. So this is called Hucklebuck, and okay, I'm going to take
tone a is big around here.
All right.
Now, that's pretty funky.
Now, there, we were talking earlier before the show, because he brought his pedal board, and we'll have him talk about that, right, in a minute. But the there's some really cool things that you're doing in there guitar-wise. You're, like, slapping almost, like plucking,
right,
the guitar to get,
right,
the bow,
right,
the, it almost is like a bass. I was wondering for a minute, was it the bass guy hitting really high or,
right,
what?
Let's see how you do that.
How do you do that?
Yeah.
You just kind of snap those strings, yeah.
That's the funk.
That kind of thing.
Now, what guitars were you using on that?
That is one guitar. That is a hardtail Strat and maple fretboard, ash body, very lively guitar. And it's got Lindy Fralin pickups in it. And there's a sixth tonal possibility. Usually a Strat will have five,
yeah,
tones, but it's got a blender switch on it, so I can get the front and back pickup simultaneously, which you can't get
The Tele type of,
yeah,
sound, yeah,
right. So I sort of, as a little challenge to myself, I used all six tones on
all
that.
The possibility,
yeah. And that track happened. The drummer is the late Billy Block. And,
I was going to ask you who was drumming,
yeah,
on that. Yeah, that was pretty funky.
And Taras Pradanyak is playing,
awesome,
bass.
Hi, and, Taras. You,
yeah,
better be listening.
Yeah. I spoke to him earlier today.
Yeah? Oh, cool.
And we just cut the basic track live, and then I did the guitar overdubs. And you're right, there is a flanger on there.
It is a flanger.
Yeah.
Is that a pedal or in the studio?
No, that was a pedal. So that was just kind of like, let's bring out a bunch of things and see.
Well, no, that's great. And in the two guitars, the two leads playing, yeah, against each other work really nice. But what amp were you using?
If memory serves me, it would be my Princeton Reverb, mid-60s Princeton.
This,
yeah,
one?
Yeah.
That's a beautiful
pretty
amp.
So is that on an album?
Yes, it is. It's on, that's the title cut of the Bum Steers Hucklebuck.
Oh,
record.
Boy.
Yeah.
Great name.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
So hauling up from one guitar, those Fralin pickups are nice because there's a rhythm thing you're doing and it gets really glassy.
Right.
Just that real glassy sound. And that flanged one is really just, there's rare to get that type of tone. I mean, that's really just perfect. And that out and with the Princeton is great. So no,
I saw your eyes, Jeff. You kind of did this, like, what is that?
Oh no, I was doing that the other night when I was listening to you. I'm like, what the? But no, it's is that the main amp? What do you use live opposed to the Princeton, or is that the one you?
I don't use that live very much. That kind of lives in the studio. But I have a couple of different amps. I've got a mid-60s deluxe reverb that just always sounds good. And I also have a 55 Bassman that Alexander Dumble went through and did some magic to it. When I got it back from him, I said, what did you do? And he said, I took the struggle out of your amplifier.
Wow.
And I went, well, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
No more questions.
Take it.
It just sounds great. And an AC-15 I use sometimes. So.
Oh, okay. So you got a pretty good variety of amp sounds.
Yeah, those are all, I generally keep the amps, fairly clean. I like a little bit of hair on the amp, but... usually fairly clean as a platform to use pedals.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of pedals, you brought a pedal board.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of Big Joe pedals on there, I noticed.
A lot of Big Joe pedals.
Was that flanger a Big Joe flanger?
That wasn't. And I'm trying to remember what that was. Because
it's kind of a unique sweep to it.
Yeah, when I recorded that, there was Big Joe. They have a flanger now, but they didn't make one then. And I'm just trying to visualize the pedal closet and just remember which one it was. But you've inspired me to look for that sound.
You have to let me know. Yeah. I got to know. That's a great sounding pedal.
I'll find that one again.
But let's take us through this pedal board.
Okay. This is started out as kind of my gigging pedal board, and I wind up using it a lot in the studio. I've got a larger board that's sort of the studio rig, but this is very functional in the studio as well. This Big Joe tremolo I love.
You're not using the Princeton tremolo.
Yeah, I started using this the Big Joe tremolo. I was on a gig with a Vibrolux, and I was using the tremolo on the Vibrolux, and I said, well, let me just A-B this tremolo on the board. And one of the nice things about the Big Joe is there's an output switch on it, an output knob. So, the nature of tremolo, when you use the tremolo in your amp, your volume is going to drop slightly, just the nature of tremolo. But with this one.
Yeah, it's still there.
Yeah, and you can actually pick up a little volume if you want it.
So you can use it as a buffer, too. Now, let me ask you, the sound of that tremolo, does it sound more like the blackface tremolo or like the old blonde?
Right.
The other one that had the full tube circuit that Fender used?
There's a shape control on this tremolo. So you can get the brown face, the brown deluxe.
You get that sound.
You can get that or like a Vox tremolo.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can get the sine wave blackface tremolo. And I've got it in the middle. But that's the
square
old
wave.
Yeah.
Who used to have that on their amp? Was it Standell? One of those guys used that. You would get that effect.
Right.
Whereas the Fenders was like a sine wave type of thing. That's great. That's pretty versatile.
It's a super versatile, just sweet-sounding pedal. They introduced that at the NAMM show a few years ago when I was demonstrating pedals for Big Joe. Mm-hmm. And the owner of the company would come by and say, "You're still on that tremolo pedal?" And I said, "I think I can't turn it off." I love it. I have an exotic compressor on there, which is a nice little compressor. I use it on this board because it's small. That's all the room I had.
That's the one above the
volume pedal. Right. I've got a chorus pedal on here, which chorus I use very infrequently. But I'm doing, it's on there because I'm playing with David Serby on Friday night, and I used a Rickenbacker 12 string on a couple of songs, and I'm not going to bring my Rickenbacker to the gig. So laziness has caused me to bring this in. This chorus pedal to just give me a little. Jerry Donahue loved that Big Joe chorus pedal, and it's got a level control on it, which is nice because you can blend in a little bit of chorusing as opposed to just having it full on all the time. So that's when I use chorus. This overdrive pedal here is called a Vintage 2, and it's such a transparent pedal. It's a Big Joe 404, and one thing that I really like about it is that there's overdrive on them. It sounds pretty clean, right? And it's all so touch sensitive, so
right.
If I dig into it, you'll get distortion, and if I back off,
it's just light and airy. Yeah.
Really clean.
It's real
amazing.
Responsive. To
Very responsive. And next pedal would be this phaser here. And again, it's got a mix control on it, so if you just want to have a little bit of phase happening, you can do that. I had a phase 100, and I still have it, but every few years I would take out the phase shifter and go, "Is it time for phase shifters yet?" And I go, "Not yet," and put it back in the closet. A year later, the time yet?
That one we were talking a little bit also too before the show, it has a unique sweep. It has a nice sound.
It does.
It reminds me of like the small stone.
Right. Speed, you can get a nice Leslie out of it.
Yeah, that's that David Gates bread sound that I was
right.
at before.
Right. Or a yellow univibe. Not something I use very often, but when you want the Robin Trower,
the full-blown Marshall Univibe,
right? So that's kind of cool. And for the some of the New Orleans funk stuff, it's nice having a phase shifter. Leo Nocentelli from the Meters was a guitar player that had a lot of influence on me as a rhythm guitar player. There's another. A Mississippi rhythm guitar player, R.L. Burnside. I don't know if you were familiar with him or not.
Mm-mm.
It was in North Mississippi, and I'm still trying to learn how to play rhythm guitar like him.
Oh, wow.
Yes, it's just
wow.
Amazing stuff. You know?
Something about that part of the country, right?
Yeah, he played with his thumb and his index finger.
Yeah.
And it's like... How are you doing that?
Maybe that's all he had.
Yeah, he had more than that, but he was cool.
Well, I'm going to play another clip because this is with the Tall Men group.
Okay.
And the rhythm section, the funky feel of this is cool. It's a very cool thing. And again, we'll go through the guitars. There's a great lead in this, and this the general sound of the guitars.
So before you play that, maybe Ed could explain the Tall Men.
Tall Men Group is a, it's more of a collective than it is a band. It's six songwriters, and we get together once a month, and each of us will bring in a brand new song based on a challenge. And it's wonderfully creative, and it's there's a lot of camaraderie. It's a very fun thing to be part of. Jimmy Yessian started it.
And, over dinner,
right? He's a gourmet chef, so he invited us all over for dinner. But it's a really nice bunch of guys, and great musicians, great songwriters. And the challenge for this song was to write a surf song.
Really?
Yeah. And since I grew up in Mississippi, and we didn't do a whole lot of surfing,
surf the Mississippi.
I thought I'd make something up.
Because the rhythm section, it's a real funky thing. I really like this.
All right.
Let me go ahead and play it, okay. And then we'll talk more about what you're doing on it. A unique perspective of surf music, but very, very cool. It's just really... Now, let's break that down a little bit. There's some interesting things. You have on the right side, you have the vibrato, the tremolo that you're using. And then on the left side, is that Big Joe Fazer?
It is.
That sound is really nice. Yeah. It's kind of like a little skank thing you're doing there.
That was all done with this pedal board.
With that pedal board. Yeah. And then what was going on with the lead guitar?
That is a Cabernita, a Tele-style body. And it's got a Gretsch pickup in it. So it's a single pickup guitar, one Filtertron pickup. Actually, it's a Curtis Novak Filtertron, which is a really nice sounding pickup. I used this Big Joe 404 for a little bit of overdrive on it, and this Princeton amp.
That's a great sound, and then you get that real honk type of, you're doing that like, there's a little run that you're doing on the side.
Right, and the rhythm guitar is that's a Strat for that.
Strat, and same one, the hardtail?
I think that's another one. I think it's a Mary Kay Strat.
And did you play bass on it?
I did. Yes.
So what are you using? What were you using bass wise? That's a great sounding bass.
That's a 64 jazz bass. Yeah.
64 jazz. Yeah. Oh wow.
Fitting for that song.
Yeah. Right?
No, it's just that other Strat, the Strat that you're using for the rhythm, it's still glassy with the phaser.
Yeah, it's the pickups are pretty weak. so it's not going to hit the amp very hard. And with a clean amp and that, that's a, it's a lightweight ash body and a maple neck and weak pickups. And that sort of that combination is, you really hear a lot of the a lot of wood in the guitar, and it's not breaking up the front end of the amp very much, you know. So it's a nice,
oh, that's cool. Nice, oh, that's very cool.
Pretty fun.
I want to talk a little bit about this guitar.
Okay.
That you, because you did some work to it. And even though I think you're using, you mentioned the clip you have here is Leave This Town with
right.
Judy Choi,
yes.
Is it Choi?
Toy. T-O-T-O-Y.
And Spencer Davis is on it, right?
Those are different.
Okay, because it's set in the MP3.
His
name popped up in it.
Oh, okay. No.
But anyway, so you're using the you're using another wood one?
Yeah, a wooden one. And I was playing on Judy Toy's track. I was playing a lap style.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So you're playing, and then
yeah,
which there was some acoustic guitar in there too, right?
I'd have to listen to it, but could,
all right. Well, let's go ahead and play it and grab
okay.
the
because okay.
we're going to go into that, and it's
right.
really cool stuff. That's nice. All right, here is the this the name of this song is where is it?
Gonna leave this
leave
town.
This town. Right. Is it gonna leave this town or leave this town?
Maybe it's just leave this town.
Leave this town. All right, so here we go. This is Judy Toy.
Dying to cross the border, any place but here. How good would you look without that Chevy key? That'll be my ticket out of here. Give me room for my suitcase on wheels, room to stretch out and see just how that feels, and some time for primping in the mirror. I'm gonna leave this town. I'm gonna jump into your Chevy and roll the top down. Shake off the dust onto the ground. I'm gonna leave this town, this town. I'm gonna leave this town. I'm gonna jump into your Chevy and roll the top down. Shake off the dust onto the ground. I'm gonna leave this town, this town, this town.
Now, great stuff.
Thank you.
You have there's an acoustic in there.
Right.
But there sounds like there's another guitar, like a volume pedal thing, where you're just fading in just to get that resonant. There's like this deep, it's not strings, but it acts like a pad.
And there is a synthesizer in there as well.
Okay.
Right.
But were you doing anything else with that?
There's probably a volume pedal electric guitar, probably a Strat, just... coming in behind the synth, but the idea for me using the dobro on that was it's the song is obviously not your traditional country or bluegrass song, you know, where you would think of using a dobro, but I thought there was an emotional component of it. There's a this woman coming out of a small town, a rural area, she wants to go somewhere.
Yeah.
So the dobro kind of locked in emotionally for me.
Well, it felt like you were playing more blues on the dobro than the typical dobro type stuff.
Right.
Which gave it more of that kind of mournful type of soulful.
Yeah.
It's a great sound. And what brand dobro?
It's a dobro.
Just the regular dobro.
Yeah.
Great sound. It was really. How did you? Did you use any special mic on that?
One condenser mic, sort of between the neck and the resonator, and those guitars. There's a lot of difference where you mic it. You can move the mic a very short distance and get a completely different sound or a very different sound on them.
Mm-hmm.
So
because it's very clear. You can what you're playing is articulate. You can hear it. And sometimes it can get. I've heard other dobros play, and sometimes it's hard to get that real clear.
Yeah.
Not glassy, but I mean, right. Like you hear the a little more of the overtone timbres of the string.
Right.
That's great sound. Yeah. That's just amazing. And do you remember what the acoustic was?
Judy was playing the acoustic, and I don't recall. She played a J50.
A J50.
Yeah, a Gibson J50 jumbo. Right.
That's a great sounding guitar.
Yeah, it was a cool guitar.
Great sound. Yeah. So tell us about this guy.
Well, this is a National Duolian, and one of the what dovetails nicely with the dobro is that. John DePero was the guy that designed this guitar, and he was working for National in the 30s, and the National Tricone was a brass-bodied guitar that was selling for $250 back then. It was a very expensive guitar, a brass body with German silver. And three resonator cones. They were expensive instruments. And the owner of National said, "John, we need a guitar that's cheap. That you know, people, you know, Gibson and Martin have $35 guitars. We need a $35 guitar." Mm. So DePero designed this Duolian, and President National said, "Great, let's make them." He goes, "No, they're not right yet. Let me work on it." He goes, "No, we're making them." And he said, "Well, if you make these guitars, I'm going to quit because it's not right."
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So they made them, and he quit. And he started a company with his brothers, the DePero brothers, and they call their company Dobro.
Uh-huh.
And then he thought those were right. And I guess sometime later, National and Dobro, you know, patched up their differences. They were pals again.
That's a great story. I would never knew that behind the scenes, really.
So this guitar is the reason that we have Dobros, because it.
That's amazing.
And
so cool.
I think
goes out of tune easily, huh?
It's as I said earlier, it's like a trash can with strings. You know,
it goes out of tune easily, though, right?
It shouldn't. It's
so you tuned it and then put it down, and then you have to tune it again.
Yeah, it's well, if you feel it, it's pretty chilly in
right,
here.
Right.
So and
yeah, I just got my sweater on.
Right.
Would you like a sweater?
Yeah. It's got a great. Well, also too, the temperatures changed when it came out.
Yeah.
It's still adjusting a little bit. That's it. Now, originally, that had a square neck, right?
Right. It was a square neck and was designed to be played like this, you know, this. And I played it that way for a while, and I would just, if I wanted to play lap style, I would play it that way. But the square neck wasn't that big, so I would flip it over. And then I got interested in just turning it into a round neck guitar.
So did you modify the square neck into the round, or you got a new neck?
I got a new neck, and I could put it back completely originally because I have the square neck, and the neck actually goes all the way through the body and is attached to that screw.
Oh wow! Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's a guy named Mark Schoenberger who lives up in Grover Beach, and I had. Seen Nationals advertised with Schoenberger necks on them, and they were more expensive than the original necks, guitars with the original necks. And I thought, well, you've modified a vintage guitar, but it's worth more now. How does that happen? You know. So I called Mark, and a very interesting guy. So I was going to be going up that direction. It's near San Luis Obispo. And so I dropped in to see him, and I played some guitars that he had done. I went, "Oh, okay, you're the guy." And he talked about, you know, the what size neck I wanted, and just made it exactly like I wanted it to be. And when I told him I wanted a rosewood fretboard, he says, well, you know, I don't have any good rosewood right now. Let me call National. He used to work at National and talked with the owner of National. And I said, oh, yeah, we'll get a nice fretboard. It's because I knew Don already. So it was cool that they helped each other.
Yeah,
it was very friendly. And I still, anytime I'm going north, I drop in and see Mark Schoenberger at his
very
home
cool.
and workshop, and he's always got something cool.
What city is it?
Grover Beach, which is right near Pismo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's just a little community there.
Beachy town.
Yeah.
So that's a mahogany neck with a rosewood fingerboard, right?
It is, right. Yeah. Exactly.
And then how does that work? This, because I've never seen one this covered up. Usually the resonator is a little more accessible. But what's under that little bar where, is that a pickup under there? Is this electric?
No, that's it's called the biscuit. And that's just where the bridge is, you know.
So the bridge is there, and then how does it connect to the resonator, or how does it? We've never really gone into.
Yeah, the National resonator. If you think about a speaker, this would be like the magnet on the speaker, and the resonator sends sound into this steel body and resonates this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a dobro, the resonator is flipped around the other way, and they have a spider bridge, so the sound is coming out more. That was DePero's idea. And all of these guitars from the 20s and 30s, they were just trying to make them louder.
Right.
And especially people that played lap style, because if you think about it, if you're playing without amplification,
the sound would be going up.
Right? Your sound's going up. Everybody else is going out.
Yeah.
So they wanted to make those suckers loud.
So is this facing in?
In, yeah.
That one's facing
in. The resonator is facing in.
But then it comes out of the sound holes.
Like. Right, and it will just really...
It's loud.
Yeah, it's crunchy.
That's got a lot of gain, yeah. Now, what's your tuning? A tuning?
This is a G tuning.
It's a G tuning, okay.
And if I were playing dobro, I would have a GBD, GBD. So I'd have two triads. With the National, I only have one third. So it's a D, a G, a D, a G, a B, and a D. Flat right now. So you can get the lower, you know, those low fifths and the different.
It's a real aggressive sound to it.
It is.
Is it more? Is the dobro more mellow?
Dobro has more nose on it. I would say it's more nasal and sort of cleaner. And these were more associated with blues artists and more so than country artists. So you think of dobro as being country and bluegrass, and Nationals as being more blues or ragtime.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you so you're using tunings on there. Do you find yourself using different tunings on the acoustic guitar, or do you tend to keep the acoustic guitar at standard pitch?
Pretty much standard. Occasionally, I will, you know, use an acoustic with a tuning, but
for the most part,
standard tuning.
And then this thing sounds great. It's really aggressive.
One of the tunings that I'll use on electric or acoustic, if I'm, this is a Gibson J45. And So if I'm
beautiful,
if I want to, I play slide a lot of times in standard tuning. Mm. But if I want a really quick tuning, I'll just drop the high E to D. And then in my mind, I have five strings that are standard tuning. Like, I can just play regular chords. But I've got four strings that are in G tuning. So I'll think about... So I'm thinking, okay, I'm in G tuning for four strings, standard tuning for five strings. And they just kind of cross over.
Lot to remember.
Yeah, you know, it gets crazy, some of the different tunings that are used a lot. But that's pretty cool. It's a good quick fix.
Yeah, it's like you don't want to spend, you know, 3 minutes between songs trying to go to a complete G right. tuning or an A tuning or something like
second
that.
Or
having
a second guitar.
Right. Again, it's probably just laziness.
Makes you work harder, though.
That's a beautiful sounding
guitar. It sounds so pretty. I just heard one chord. It's like, oof.
And this is a new,
rich.
New guitar.
It's a big body.
2016. I became aware of these and started looking for one, and there were none for sale. Gibson made 65 of these.
Oh, wow.
In 2016. It's called a 1950s Antiquity.
Yeah.
And one came up for sale in Minneapolis, and I...
Have you been watching for it?
I was looking for it.
Score.
Snagged it.
It's just got that... I mean, I'm a big fan of Martin's, but right. that has a nice sound. And some of the a lot of even the 60s Gibsons, the acoustic guitars had a different sound, but it really was nice. It has the highs and the timbre of it is really beautiful. This is a nice guitar. Really, really nice.
Thank you.
And then some of the stuff that you play on there, when the finger picking and strumming stuff, it's just kind of nice. Now, how do you mic that?
Just gonna ask.
Right. usually a small diaphragm condenser. I have an Audix SCX1 that I'm real fond of. Sometimes I'll use an 8 gauge E414. It's a larger diaphragm. Or if I'm micing stereo, maybe I'll put the 414 back behind. Mm-hmm. The bridge, and then I'll put the small diaphragm condenser sort of where the neck meets the body at about maybe 4 inches, something like that.
Wow, that's a great sound. Yeah. So you usually use two mics?
If I'm going to be, let's say it's the strumming part. I will use one, do it mono, and then double it. And so I don't want two stereos. I want, you know, two monos that I can split out. And
so if you're just doing like a solo guitar or something like
if
that.
If I'm doing a solo guitar, I'll use a couple of different.
But do you play live with it?
This one I do. I got this because my favorite acoustic is a 1939 Gibson J35, which is the predecessor to this model, and I love that guitar, and I'm not going to take it out.
I don't blame you.
And then I saw this, and that's that's probably pretty close, but I've been recording this one as well.
But that doesn't have a pickup in it, right?
It does, yeah.
Oh, it does.
It does have a pickup.
It does. Oh. Yeah. So this one I'm not afraid to take out. And it's been a joy to play.
Give it a few years when you break it in, and you'll never want it there. No, this one's too valuable. That's the thing. They get too valuable.
Yeah.
But, we're almost out of time. I want to thank you for coming on, and I want you to just briefly, what's going on? Where can people see you?
This Friday night in Culver City, I'll be with David Serby. Mm-hmm. And his wonderful band, Dorice Bailey is playing keyboards and singing, and Dale Daniels playing drums, and Greg Boas is playing bass. Really, really so much fun to play with that band. And we're at the Cinema Bar in Culver City. And David is pretty fearless, and he's a wonderful songwriter. He's got 6 new songs. David and I got together and ran through them. The rest of the band hasn't played them, and we're going to...
They will be in the show.
They'll be in the show.
It's still David Serby and the latest scam.
Latest scam.
No cover at Cinema Bar.
And then on the 11th of August, I'll be with the Tallman Group at the Coffee Gallery backstage in Altadena.
Yeah, great place.
And that will be the 6 songwriters. And
you can name names if you want.
Yeah, it's Jimmy Essien and Jeff Kozak, Severn Brown, John Stowers, and Marty Axelrod.
Very, very, very cool. Lori, anything you want to mention?
Well, I'll mention a bunch of things really quickly. This Wednesday, the Buzz Wizards are back at the Spud, the Baked Potato, with Toshi Yanagi. And August 8th, Troy Dexter is playing for the first time at Vibrato. And then Brian Auger, August 10th and 11th at the Baked Potato with the Oblivion Express. And Liliana Reyes, Walfredo Reyes' daughter, who is an amazing percussion player and singer, will be part of the band for those 2 shows. And then our friend Lamont Dozier is going to be playing the Sons of Legends at The Rose, along with Paris Escobedo and Tito Puente Jr. and Jamin J. Lamont. They're all juniors of the soul, famous soul singers. Yeah.
That's great.
So,
well, that's great. Now, I want to really thank my friend Gary Rodenko. I'm wearing his shirt, The Amp Shop. And this mic that I'm using here, that's right here in front of the silver mic, it's from a company made in from Latvia, and the company's name is Simple Way. A really nice mic. It's got a really rich response, real high-end, real shimmery high-end to it. And they also make this very, very cool preamp that I'm using here. It uses the power from the phantom power from the board, and it basically powering my ribbon mic. That's what Ed's using right now for talking. And I'm going to set him up with a stereo setup right now. And as he takes us out, you're going to use this guitar,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
So we'll take that out. But listen to it. These are great little preamps. They're not expensive, but you can't use phantom power with a ribbon mic. It'll blow it up. So you have to. It's really nice to be able to use one of those. And they're letting me borrow this, so I'm going to use this on some more of the shows. I just wanted to thank Simple Way for that, and Gary Rodenko from the Amp Shop Bass Exchange for letting me borrow this stuff, and he's been on a lot with different cool stuff. So anyway, what are you going to take us out with while you're telling us that? I'm going to move this mic in a test bed.
I'm going to take it out with a song. Let's see. Called I Won't Confess.
Okay.
And it's a little groove that I picked up this groove from a guy named J.B. Lenore, who was from about maybe 12 miles from where I grew up. And he wrote a song called Talk to Your Daughter. You know that song? Robin Ford cut it.
Okay.
And anyway, J.B. was a really cool guitar player, so this is kind of his... kind of his vibe there. She and me got a secret. Than that.
keep our little secret underneath my big hat. I won't tell, and you can't guess. The boys wanna know, but I won't confess.
Everybody, have a great week.